Dr. Christy Taylor, welcome. Dr. Taylor, aka the Social Impact Career Coach, is the founder of Work Solutions. She's an award-winning educator, an expert career coach with over 20 years experience in leadership, career development, training design, and workshop facilitation. Her expertise includes creating impactful learning experiences, guiding professionals toward career success, and fostering leadership development. Dr. Taylor's career coaching empowers individuals to build meaningful and memorable, resilient careers. Dr. Taylor, thank you so much for taking part in this conversation titled Navigating Workplace Bullying, Finding Resilience and Feeling Joy, Even in Crisis. So thank you for being here.
Thank you so much, Andy. I'm really excited about today's conversation.
Great. We had some time to talk last week, and so I've gotten some sense of your expertise, but let me start with this. In all the work that you do, so much of it, I think, really involves conflict resolution. Can you tell me a little bit about what you're hearing in your practice and how we can begin to address the conflicts that we see at work?
So we talk about conflict resolution from the standpoint of what I experienced as a career coach and what my clients are coming to me with. A lot of it's those pain points of them feeling frustrated that they're looked over, that they're in the office. There is the good old boy system of favoritism. And it's not necessarily in the context of race or anything like that. It's just that sometimes you have groups within the office that are people are favoring each other. So it can go either way, right? And so when we get into that dynamics or talk about, you know, what's happening in the workplace, what do they feel like is holding them back? A lot of times it ends because of those systems that are in place, conflict, difference, personality differences that are leading to conflict, not necessarily knowing how to navigate the politics of the workspace, or really feeling like that if there is something that's occurring that maybe is preventing me in the form of conflict from getting to my next steps in my career, not really knowing how to navigate the process of reporting things that really can be deemed as bullying or discrimination. I mean, that's a lot of what I run into in my practice.
And so my emphasis and the things I'm looking at are in the definition of bullying. And we can talk about how many forms that takes. But it seems like yours is a little bit more nuanced. But are you still finding, I mean, obviously you're dealing with people that are having a difficult work experience and they may want to move on, which is why they've come.
Yeah.
But are you seeing and hearing stories of mistreatment where the boss, the supervisor, the manager is speaking, is speaking in a belittling way, is ostracizing, is angry? Give me a sense for the kinds of stories you're hearing.
So the kind of stories I often hear, especially because a lot of my clients are still coming to me from healthcare. So when I started my business a year ago, we talked a few years ago, I solely focused on healthcare practitioners. And we know that that is a field where everyone can get burnt out, right? It is, I mean, it's the field of, it is a field where people are overworked, sometimes underpaid. And sometimes it can get very tense in terms of, you know, the frustrations of just because of you're dealing with people who are not always able to express their emotions and they're working in an environment that is emotionally tense. So a lot of times my clients, if they're coming to me, if they're coming to me with that type of frustration and not getting along with their boss or even some of their teammates, it's because they're lashing out at each other just due to the intensity of the work environment. And then from the perspective of looking at it from somebody who's in a leadership position, you think about it, you are charged with leading a team or supporting a group of individuals, and you don't have the emotional control to the point where you're lashing out at employees that, and it's making them in an already tense environment feel like, well, I gotta move on and go to my next step. So we're kind of shortchanging ourselves here in healthcare, because in this space, we need to be focused on keeping people and retaining people. So when I have people who are coming to me saying, I'm just mentally burnt out because my boss or my team lead is cultivating an unhealthy environment just by the favoritism or how they talk or speak to me, you know, not kind of giving me that level of equity, saying a lot of times, this is especially the piece of, we talk about healthy workplaces or healthy environments, and sometimes it's not even the screaming at you. It is the false sense of engagement with the employees, making them feel like that they have actual input, but, you know, you're really like overlooking what they're saying or not really giving them any stake in the game. That's a form of bullying itself, because it's almost like some type of psychological play, not really giving people that fair play or input, although you're promising that. And then again, a lot of times just lashing out. As leaders, you know, there should be some level of emotional control because you're setting the tone for your team. So that's a lot of type of feedback that I get. Just people just burnt out.
Sure. And it's so interesting because when I started looking back at my career and I started getting involved in this arena of incivility, psychological harassment, and bullying, I thought when I first started out looking at it that I had left Chicago to have a career in television, live television news in New York. And so I thought, well, there's so much incivility and yelling and screaming and lack of appreciation. But I thought I kind of asked for it because, well, this is television in New York. This is part of the job. This is what I asked for. And as I've done the work, just as you're suggesting, I found that it is rampant throughout all industries, especially healthcare. And I'm interested because I'm hearing about, I saw a YouTube video of six young doctors, interns, medical doctors, but interns, who had been so terribly bullied by the older doctors. That the first doctor, a woman, started telling her story. She burst out into tears.
So yeah.
It happens by the doctors to other doctors, doctors to nurses, nurses to other healthcare providers and helpers. I hear about it all the time in education, in nonprofit.
Yeah.
And it's almost unbelievable that in so many fields where people's whole job is to help others and be compassionate.
We're not ourselves.
It's just not happening.
I want to touch on, Andy, like, you know, when we think about bullying, right, we do think about that, a boss is screaming at you.
Yeah.
But one of the points that I want to make is when we talk about those subtle things that people are doing is the macro and micro aggressions, right? It's the comments that people make. That is a form of bullying, the things that you feel like that you have to accept or deal with, because the micro aggressions, like, we kind of see up front, right? You can kind of tell when people are making comments or kind of setting you up for failure. And that's the situation kind of like you're referring to, where those doctors felt so much pressure, right? Those students felt so much pressure that one of them just, you know, you find yourself breaking down with emotions. But the macro aggression is, again, when the tone is set by the leadership, those are the things that are embedded within the organizational culture that we don't always realize that we need to be looking out for, because all of those, that's institutionalized bullying.
Well, so true. And what I've seen in my own career working in media is the worst thing that happens. I mean, it's bad enough to be mistreated, not appreciated, all that kind of thing. But what I've found, and I think you're hearing the same things, this is just my own experience, but I'm interested in what you're hearing in your practice, is when you have these kinds of behaviors, microaggressions, macroaggressions, or even incivility, you know, aggression, even the smaller things, it hinders communication. I was in the communication business, media. And yet all of a sudden now, you don't want to say this because you might get berated for it. You might be criticized. You might get a microaggression. So then you just stop sharing ideas. I worked at a place where everybody had their door closed because nobody liked each other. And so they just kept their door closed so they wouldn't have to communicate with each other. And that was as a result of people not treating each other well. And it started at the top. So in my world, it was a lack of communication, which is the worst thing in a media company. How are you seeing the outcomes of this mistreatment?
Yeah, it's the turnover rates.
Okay.
I mean, so much of what I focus on is, you know, workplace resiliency, because people think that that's a surface level conversation where it's just like, let's have a stress management workshop and burnout prevention workshop. The workplace resiliency is all of the things that we're talking about now. It's talking about the macro and micro aggressions in your workplace culture, the lack of communication. That is what leads to people. Ultimately, it's a surface level conversation to say, just giving people a bunch of work is burning them out, because that's true. But you have to look at your workplace culture and look at how bullying it impacting your workplace culture. It shuts people down. They don't want to talk. They don't want to communicate. And eventually, you know, that is impeding your culture, because no one wants to speak up. No one wants to address a problem. They're scared of hearing ideas. So you have high turnover rates, and you also have a lack of innovation within your culture, because the people that you brought on the team to innovate, they're too afraid to speak up, because if you speak up, you are scared that you might be criticized. You might, you know what I mean? And so I've been in those type of environments before personally. My clients have experienced that. And I mean, I think that it's one thing that we really have to pay attention to is when we see people who are, we call them our great people in our organization, and then they are progressing and it seems like they're on a trajectory to have a career in an organization. And all of a sudden, you just start to see a change in behavior. These individuals start to shut down.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? And eventually those folks move on. We start to lose great people because sometimes we think as leaders that it's, well, maybe they were just offered a better opportunity. That's not always the case. A lot of times they're just burnt out with the workspace because they feel like their ideals are not being heard. Or maybe, you know, they're really, truly a great person. And that's where, again, because macro and microaggression can occur on the opposite side. You can have really good people and they get bullied because they're really good at what they do, right? People are jealous, you know.
Yes.
So there's a lot of what I'm seeing is the burnout because of that. Because, again, burnout is when we talk about being rooted, it's so rooted in organizational culture. It's not just that surface level. Oh, you know, they got a lot of work. That's true. But you also have to look at the organizational culture, too. Especially when you got people in offices and you close the doors. Now, imagine us in healthcare. I use the example of healthcare, but I'm out of education, you know, and it's the same. Now, imagine, and to your point, we're supposed to be helping each other. We're supposed to be helping other people, right? And we can't even help each other. There's no level of civility with how we're getting along with this, especially because I consider all of that nonprofit, right? The nonprofit, the healthcare industry. That leaks out. That culture leaks out into the community because you can't. I wrote in my book that you cannot, the way that you are internally, how you function as an organization internally, it will bleed. Right.
No question.
Right.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so let me ask you, because I think most people understand what a microaggression is, but maybe some don't. And how would you define the difference? And maybe you can give some examples, because look, in my own experience, and I acknowledge my white privilege, but we are thankfully working in more diverse organizations now. And somebody may say something. I'll give you an example. And you know, I heard an example of a microaggression is where the group was deciding what to order for lunch. And somebody said, hey, how about Chinese? And then they went over to an Asian person. I don't even think they were Chinese to say, hey, would you order for us? Right. Which can make the person feel very uncomfortable. And so can you kind of describe maybe how microaggressions are affecting people? And is there, because I'm not even sure I understand necessarily the difference between a micro and a macro. I certainly understand when you're being yelled at and screamed at or people ostracizing you or trying to keep you from succeeding. And I acknowledge in my workplace bullying studies and experience, Dr. Taylor, nobody threw a stapler at my head. I wasn't blushing, you know, God wasn't blushing out, you know, out of my head. And I was never sexually harassed. So I'm not suggesting that, but it does hurt and it can be traumatic. So I'm just wondering about what you're hearing in your practice and how the micro and macro aggressions are tearing people down and tearing organizations down.
So if you think about economics, right, macro is the larger part. So when you talk about macro aggression, this means that microaggressions have occurred to the point where now it's kind of like an embedded thing within organizational culture. I mean, I deal with military a lot. I haven't personally at this point in my career. I have previously, but in my current situation, I have not experienced this. But a lot of times in the military culture, it's a very aggressive culture, right? It's like, you know, especially for a woman, one of the guys, right? And so, commanders and leaders in the military have to be very conscientious of watching the larger scale culture. That is where you see a lot of macro aggression. So if you're a leader and you're sitting in a space of leadership and you see things happening at the micro level, right?
Yeah.
And you don't address them, they become embedded in your organizational culture. So that macro is the larger part, but it all starts with microaggression, which is just like those. It could be conscious or unconscious, because again, we do have conscious and unconscious bias that exist. And I don't necessarily, when I'm teaching courses or doing workshops on unconscious bias, I don't automatically call somebody racist or sexist because of unconscious bias, because it's unconscious.
is the goal of a workshop or a training is to help you identify what my, and we all experience it, Andy. I'll give you a good example. It's like, I'm a Black woman who grew up in Mississippi. There were two races, right? We always say Black and white. I didn't really know about other cultures. So I wouldn't expect somebody who grew up in the Midwest who wasn't exposed to, the Black experience, who wasn't exposed to just really know a lot about Black people. Just like I didn't know it. There's not a lot about Hispanic people, right?
Yeah.
But you're only going to know what you're saying. That there was just unconscious bias. We all have that. And it does not make you a racist. It's just like, wouldn't you acknowledge you don't know everything and you try to learn when you start making conscious decisions, right? So about being better and doing better because you know it more. Microaggressions are those things that we say, like the example you gave of going to the Asian person to order for you. Order for the team, right? It wasn't something that was done like on purpose as in, like a conscious, like a racist thing or anything like that. But it is just like, it was an assumption that was made. Sometimes I've had people say to me, Black women's hair in the workplace.
Okay,
you got new hair today. Like, I laugh it off, but it's like, okay, is my hair really the topic of discussion or are we here to work, right? You know what I mean? So it's like, if I don't have that relationship with you to make those types of jokes, then to me, that's a little bit of a microaggression, but I don't tend to overthink that. But some people will. So it's just those little comments that people make. But the problem is when whether it's conscious or unconscious, when we're not seeking to get better, if it's conscious, then you're already in a place of explicit bias, right? But if it's unconscious, you don't necessarily know that these little jokes that you're making. But that's why you gotta have leadership in place that's like, hey, this is not the correct thing that we should be doing, and are going to foster environments where people continue to feel safe, because those little microaggressions that people think they can get away with, that turns into macroaggression, which is embedded into the organizational culture. So hopefully that kind of provides some perspective.
Well, yes, absolutely. Wonderfully said. And it's similar in the traditional workplace bullying where, if a boss yells at you once or criticizes you harshly once, that's not bullying. If it's this ongoing thing that continues to add up, that then you feel like you're in an unsafe place.
Exactly.
You get fired at any moment. And if you're walking around the office and at any moment somebody may say something that's insulting, doesn't understand your culture. And like you said, it may be out of ignorance, but that's where racism comes from, it seems to me. And I'm not an expert. It's okay to make a mistake as long as you then understand why it is indeed a mistake and hurtful to somebody, then we can get better and foster better communication.
Exactly. One of the things that you talk about is you talk about civility.
Yes.
And, in the military, people think that we have a very aggressive culture. So when a lot of times, if in our culture, like when you're going through training, people are screaming at you and da 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 da, right? That's not your day-to-day work, average workplace. But that's a training environment. Even in the military, we have a level of civility where once you get to your professional environment and you are, you transition out of that training phase, nobody should be screaming at you. So sometimes if you're experiencing a boss where it's going beyond the point of civility, where somebody is actually screaming at you because they don't have the emotional maturity to handle a difficult situation, I think that that's totally past the point of, obviously there's a both micro and macro aggressions that exist, because what part of the organizational culture where we've allowed it to get to the point where leadership can say, where leaders can say, it's okay for me to behave this way, right?
Yes, I'm so interested in that issue, because even, and I didn't serve in the military, you did, so you would know whether the screaming, yelling, and training made the new recruits better, more disciplined, more focused. And maybe it does.
The military approach is that, and so I think that's a good kind of transition, right? Because the military approach is designed, think about it, you get an 18-year-old kid
or 20,
they're going to book, it's designed to break you down and build you up. So you're going to boot camp with the purpose of breaking you down, building you up until to shaping you. But when you are an adult going to the work environment, if you're not in the military, you're not in an environment where people should be breaking you down to build you up.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Great. Thank you for clarifying that. No, it's a great point. And I wondered about it because I played sports and even in the workplace, I was always a hard worker, loyal, devoted, productive. I didn't need anybody to be mean-spirited towards me to make me work better or harder. And coaches could scream at me. It didn't mean I was going to make the next basket because they were screaming at me. You know, I think, and in the times, and I was a boss much of my career, Dr. Taylor, and when I lost my temper, and it wasn't very often, and I've been assured I wasn't a bully boss, but I wasn't a perfect boss either. I lost my temper at times, but it was usually because something bad was happening with me. You know, it's really more often, I think, about the person themselves and where they're at in their own lives. It doesn't excuse the behavior. But I think as targets of that behavior, sometimes if we can just think, you know what, I know I'm good, I know I'm hardworking, they got a problem, and I just need to keep focused on the fact that I'm contributing, I'm doing the best I can.
Yeah, I think it's about the relationship that you have with your team, Andy, because I think one thing that sets a boss apart, we're going to be human, right? We all scream at the wall. We all if you have the relationship with your team where they just know, man, Andy gets under some pressure today, and I'm not saying that it's okay to scream at people. But I think we all as leaders have screamed at the wall or something. You know what I mean? But your temper, and you can come back and with a cool head, right? And this is not a pattern. And you're not necessarily picking on people. You're just screaming at the wall. You have a relationship with your team where it's like, you can scream at the wall. They can come in and scream at the wall with you, you know, and cultivate them. So you all scream and then you go back to work, right? That is totally different than purposely picking on somebody or alienating somebody, not giving a space where people are feel comfortable, because you want people to feel comfortable expressing themselves. But I mean, I've been in environments where it was so tense that I didn't even know, like, could I even go to human resources? Because the one thing about it is the human resources department works for the company. They don't work for
Yes, Dr. Taylor, I'm sorry for interrupting, but I just had to say, the CEO, who's usually my bully boss, wrote the checks for the HR people. You think they're going to walk into the corner office and go, look, we've got to stop that? Not a chance.
They're absolutely not. Now, I have my own naivety. The portions of my story, I will share my own naivety about workplace culture and this whole belief in the greater good, that if I went through the proper channels, reported it. No, because people in leadership, they're focused on what's going to make them look good and what's going to help them. Now, we're all going to do that, right? But the higher up you go, I guess the tougher that it gets. And you have to make the decision as a senior leader about how you're going to lead your team and set the tone for your organization. And I think I very much learned the hard way that HR is usually going to be they're coaching you. They're there for you, right, in the process of going through the process and the procedures of filing the paperwork. But at the end of the day, they work for the company. They're not here to be on your side. They're about risk mitigation. Right. And I have a degree in HR. And I still look at my own level of naivety as I was going through their process. Like, yes, I'm doing the right thing, following the procedures. You know, but I just tell clients, when you're experiencing those types of things, you got to keep an open mind, because sometimes you're not going to be able to fight a whole system, but also transition yourself, prepare yourself to exit if you need to.
You're so right about that. I mean, in my own experience, it was either the number one or number two person in the company, maybe number three, who was, very tight with the number one, the proximity to power. And I had to decide, am I going to take that person on? Am I going to call them on it? Am I going to go to their office and go, let them have it. Let them know how I feel about it. Let them know that they better stop or else. And I almost always, I think this is a common feeling, thought, if I raise this, not to HR, but just between the two of us even, I'm going to lose that war because I don't have.
Yeah, it's a little bit of career too. It's not just the war of like reporting to HR. That's why I say people come to me, they're burnt out, because it's like you want to report this stuff, but you got to think about the political dynamics of it too.
Well, and not only that, first of all, and I think this is probably true of your clients and most of us, and it doesn't have to be, it's not about TV. My story is not about TV. It's about loving what you do. And that can be whatever you do. Whatever you do, if you take pride in what you do, you work hard at it, you care about it. Education, healthcare, blue collar, working for unions, in a factory, it doesn't matter. CEO of a company, if you care about what you do and you care about the betterment of others, then you're going to work hard. And I thought at times that some of the bullies cared more about pissing up and the politics of it all than they ever did about caring for other people. And that's where you really begin to run into a problem.
You do. And I have to now imagine that 10 times on the side of an organization.
Yeah.
For organizations who, again, who are committed to this social impact, we're supposed to be making the difference, but we're behind the scenes playing the politics of why, because we're trying to write our careers, right? We still have to, you know, when we were talking, Eddie, I said, we did all of it. We do all of this for a middle class, fighting over a middle class job, right? And so it's like that person, if you're going to be the person, I remember when I was going, and I said, okay, I'm going to have to speak up about some of the things that are going on. Somebody said, do you really want to risk your career? And I mean, at that point, it was just like, well, I'm going to probably have to transition anyway, right? So,
Dr. Taylor, then you put at jeopardy your career, your livelihood, your ability to pay your bills. And I would add, in my own case, where I had worked so hard to get wherever I was, you know, I became an executive producer, vice president of programming. But even as I was a producer, associate producer, I worked very hard to get to the next level. Did I want to give it all up and let the bully win? But for most people, it's, can I take a chance on taking the bully on and losing my paycheck?
I was just writing about this, and I was talking about, you know, because I'm writing a book on resiliency, and I was just talking about this ideology of endurance. And I had that same mindset. It was just like, I grew up in a family where it was like, you work hard, you get your education, rise through the ranks, keep your hands down, don't, you know, dot your I's, cross your T's. And it's just like, even when you're working in one of the, because I've had something similar happen to where once I transitioned out of one position, I moved it to another. And I was like, this time I'm going to get it right. Right. Same situation.
Oh, I got to tell you, the title of my book is I Thought It Would Be Different, because at every new job I got, I thought it would be different. And the problem was, to a certain extent, I don't like to do self-blame. I didn't change. There were always going to be bullies.
Exactly.
So it's so interesting that you say that. Please keep going. I'm sorry to interrupt.
No. It was the same thing, right? I was like, well, this time I'm going to do it so different, right? And it was like, I was really trying to change, but this time I was really trying to go with, you know, I'm going to just keep my head down. I'm going to, you know, and it really just, the situation just got worse. And I think I told you one day I was in a meeting unit, you know, taking some meetings before we started to really, my commander just heard me in a meeting. He was like, you need to walk away from that. You know, I said, this is something when you got a military commander who is listening to you owning me and say, hey, you need to walk with me. Because I was like, no, I just need to do this for 20 more years and then I can retire, right? And I just think that we really got to transition out of that mindset of like, you don't have to do anything. We take on because I was writing about the word endurance. We say endurance means I have to be that light upon a hill that other people are looking at me. Yeah. But, you know, yes, you have to push through challenges, but you don't have to be bullied. You don't have to sit there and take that. You deserve, at minimum, you deserve as a human to have to be treated with some level of dignity and respect. And I think that in the course of survival, we forget that.
Yes. And I will tell you, and I'm glad you're writing about it, because I felt a lot of shame that I really didn't stand up to the bully. And the only thing that I felt good about in my career, really, not only thing, but what, as I look back on it, and I'm still working, but look back on my television career, I was resilient. I kept going. But I'm telling you, as you know all too well, and you're writing about it, it's not a healthy way to be mentally, emotionally, physically. Just to keep going is not the answer. So
you can't do it if you're not self-aware, right? Once you become self-aware, you're like, I don't have to take this. Yeah. We're like walking zombies because we've just been raised to like work hard, keep your head down, do the right thing, right? But
do unto others, Dr. Clay. If I treat these people well, work hard, do all these things, doesn't happen in the military, healthcare, education, nonprofit, media. It can happen if it does, you're very lucky. But like you used the word naive before, I was naive thinking that if I just did the right things, it would come back. That's not necessarily the case. Well, let me tell you how much I've enjoyed and appreciate this conversation and getting to know you. You have so much to offer and so much fascinating information, and just your life experience creates such an informative conversation. So thank you for
that. And
you have an offering for those that are watching and listening to.
Yeah, so we're going to share with you our new course, which is the Brace for Success course. We really focus on trying to support mission-driven individuals and organizations and social impact here at Work Solutions. So we created a course that is going to walk you through the basic steps of understanding what career branding is, how to interview and overcome interview anxiety, because we are really focused on, in 2025, our real initiative is to help people to build resilient careers. And I think that really starts with the career branding piece of knowing who you are and what your commitment is. And a lot of people don't do that. They just graduate college or go into the job market and it's just like, I'm going to get a job and work here, right? So we're going to start at the foundation of just helping people to really identify their career brand and then guiding them through the process. So we'll make sure that we share that link with your audience, Andy.
Wonderful. And that's so important because it's not just about what happens once you get in the workplace or the workforce. Your expertise can help people get that first opportunity, which is so crucially important. So that's great. How can people, Dr. Taylor, best reach you for more information?
So we are available on all social medias at Work Solutions. That's WORXK Solutions. Work every platform. In addition to that, you can also reach out to me via email at ktaylor@worxk.com and visit our website, and you'll be able to actually access the course via our website at WORXKSolutions.com.
Wonderful. Thank you. You're absolutely terrific and your information is priceless. So thank you for that.
Thank you so much.
Final word from me. We call ourselves bully targets, but now let's aim to change the workplace for good. Thank you so much for watching and listening.